Blog Talk Radio.
Wins.
Losses.
Shutouts.
Shootouts.
Forehand.
Five hole.
It's time for your recap of Pittsburgh Penguins hockey.
The most important interviews, best information, hottest news, and no topic is off limits.
Radio PI. Now on the Radio PI Podcast Network.
Well, you got what you wanted, Pittsburgh Penguin fans. Not only did you desperately want and need a victory in Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Tampa Bay Lightning, as the Penguins get that win and tie up the series. Series shifts to Tampa 1-1, so the Lightning do split on the road, which is what they wanted to do, but the Penguins arguably take that momentum with them now going to Game 3 on the road, after tying up the series and getting the win in Game 2. And it's also the way they got that win is exactly what Pittsburgh Penguins fans wanted. And that was for Sidney Crosby to get going, get on the scoring sheet, and score. And he did that, and then some, leading the Penguins to the win. A rocky game for Sidney Crosby through most of it. I even tweeted to Wes Crosby, at other NHL Crosby on Twitter, giving the accidental inadvertent Twitter plug based on the fact that it's his Twitter handle, and he is the other NHL Crosby, Wes Crosby, covering the Penguins for NHL.com. He's been on these airways before. I've talked to him, covered the Penguins for several years now. It's his birthday today, and I tweeted him that on his birthday, while covering the Penguins and live tweeting the game, he was outperforming the other NHL Crosby, and meaning the other NHL Crosby being the legit NHL Crosby of Sidney Crosby, the quote-unquote best in the world. Wes Crosby might be one of the best for the coverage, but Sidney Crosby said to be the best in the world, the best in the world, and if you're going to be the best in the world, you're going to have to produce, you're going to have to step up when it counts, and you're going to have to lead your team to a victory when they need you the most. And they needed him in this game. They've been needing him through most of the playoffs despite getting wins. They needed him in Game 1 of this series. They haven't had him. Same thing with Malkin. But Sidney Crosby breaks an 8-game postseason scoring drought, gets off the snide, and gets the game winner. So doesn't just score to get off the snide, gets the game winner after an up-and-down game in which one of his defensive lapses led to a Lightning goal earlier in Game 2. Sidney Crosby gets the game winner. The Penguins tie the series. They go to Tampa Bay with a 1-1 series tie in the Eastern Conference Finals. Could this mean Sidney Crosby continues to get going and clicking? Could this wake up Evgeny Malkin? Will Phil Kessel continue to dominate as he's had a great postseason with a goal again in this game? And how will Matt Murray play in Game 3, assuming he is still the starter? He got another win, so I'd assume he still was a starter, but almost got pulled in this game, or at least that was the grumblings and the conversation through the intermission after the Lightning tied it. Able to stabilize, the Penguins won, Crosby scored the game winner, they tied the series, they go on the road with the momentum. And that also brings us to the radio gold we're giving you right now, as this is Game 2's edition of Radio PI's Stanley Cup Playoffs post-game show. Here on the Pens Initiative Airwaves and the Radio PI Podcast Network. This is brought to you by Dr. Sheeler of Sheeler Chiropractic and DKPittsburghSports.com. And I am Mike Osti. Ayatollah of Asinine. I don't usually use that moniker here on Radio PI, but why not? I use it other places. Penguins get the win, and to talk about this, and I guess be kind of happy about this in a game that maybe you thought you weren't going to be happy about, there's reason for optimism now in a land of constant complaining by the Pittsburgh fan base, but I don't have his number memorized, but I'm pretty sure. I'm 99.9. I believe this is Nick Case going to be joining me, my co-host here on Radio PI. Is that correct? Nick, are you with me?
I sure am.
Okay, I thought I had your number memorized. I was about 99% sure that was you, but didn't know if it was Jeff or not. So, all right, glad to have you back with me, Nick.
It's good to be back. My travel schedule has been
as you'd say, asinine since since the last time we talked. I have watched games of this series in the Capitol series in Greenville, South Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina, Rome, Georgia, and Charleston, South Carolina.
I've seen the Snapchat.
You know,
so.
Yeah, you know as well as I do. You got to get that money, so you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Some non-traditional hockey markets, though, but you're still watching hockey.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you got to put it on. You got to watch. You got to get your fix. So it's, but you know what? It's been mostly good news, so.
It has been mostly good news. It wasn't good news in game one, but it's good news in game two, in a game that really, I got to say, it didn't seem like it was going to be good news after the Lightning were able to tie things. What did you notice in this game? You're watching a non-traditional hockey market, but they're playing a non-traditional hockey market team that's looking to go back to the Stanley Cup final for back-to-back years, so they're a little bit different than some of the rest. But what did you notice that changed in this game? Because it really was a game where the Penguins started off flying, and in the second period looked like it was a game in mid-October where the Penguins weren't flying and were slow and seemingly bored, and Murray almost got fooled maybe. And then from then on, it was incredibly entertaining playoff hockey that you'd love to see, and the Penguins eventually got the game winner with Sidney Crosby nailing it in and allowed Twitter to breathe a sigh of relief because he was the guy that everyone wanted to score, and he gets the game winner.
Well, I think it was important, actually, that it slowed down to a more glacial pace, if you will, because you saw what happened with Murray towards the end of the period, and I think people that were starting to worry about him, I still think they're justifiably worried, because he's starting to let in some goals that he wasn't letting in at first, and they're not backbreakers like Fleury's tended to be in the playoffs. There are moments like this where there's still time to recover, but it's a trend that's kind of growing that you don't like to see, that you're worried about. So I understand those that are pro-Murray just as much as I understand those that are pro-Fleury towards the end of this. It makes sense to me. But I think slowing down that pace was good because it let him kind of compose himself more. It kind of let him figure out things and gather himself a bit more, and it just shows that he's not one that's flustered in those big moments, and it allowed him to keep that image. You know, he lets in that goal to Drew in towards the end of the first, but you know what? He comes up big the rest of the game when it mattered, and I think that game slowing down, and it really helped, and then it gave the Penguins some jump in the third and overtime to really push the issue.
And Matt Murray, honestly, he played so well in this playoff so far. After Zetkov won game one in the first round, Matt Murray got in there. Wasn't healthy toward the end of the season either because the game against Philadelphia, was able to quiet that debate, was able to come in, played well at 22 years old. And I said this too, even if Murray would get pulled and Fleury would lead him to a cup and everyone would say Fleury should have started the whole time once healthy, there's still no way anyone can be mad at Matt Murray the way he's played. He's exceeded expectations. And I kind of have waffled on this even myself. You want to ride the hot hand, but there is the argument that Marc-Andre Fleury is the better goaltender, even if he's not been better by the numbers this year. His history, his experience. Maybe if the Penguins would have lost this game and Matt Murray would have continued to think and allow some garbage goals like he did towards the beginning of this game, game two, that then the Fleury people would have said, well, yeah, Matt Murray is playing well, but Fleury just has the experience, and the experienced former Cup champion goaltender won't allow those goals and won't collapse under that pressure, but of course anybody can. Fleury has the tools. So you really can't go wrong. I'm sure there's many, many teams that would love to have this debate. Would love to have the fans and media divided on, do you have a former Cup champion, 300-plus game winner, Marc-Andre Fleury play, or do you have a Matt Murray who at 22 years old is completing one of the best postseasons for a guy his age ever? I don't think it's a debate that most teams would be upset about having, but I would imagine with the win that now you stick with Matt Murray again in game three, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? It gives you breathing room, too. If Murray does falter in this game, suddenly you're down 2-0. There's no choice. You have to go to Fleury. There isn't an option.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so anyway, because, yeah, he hasn't played in
a couple
2 months, but Murray's had bad games back-to-back questionable goals in both games, it's time to go to Fleury. But this, Murray's given himself at least two more games, I think, of leeway. If they lose the next game, okay, I understand. If they lose the game after that and it's Murray looking bad again, then it's absolutely Fleury's goal. Now, that glove hand is giving me some worry, and I think that's – even people were saying early on that was kind of his weakness, and that's fine. But right now, it's still Murray's net, and the win is a big reason why. And him coming down the stretch there and making important saves in that third when Tampa had the few chances they had, it just kind of solidifies that. It makes everyone breathe a little easier. It makes everyone feel better, and that's key.
And now you kind of quiet that debate a little bit, because even though Fleury could come in there, and if you were down 0-2 and you're going on the road, you have to go to Fleury. But it also, with a goaltender that's been out 2 months, shaking some rust off, I don't care how good he is and how long he's been in the league, it's a dire doomsday scenario, because then you're going to have a veteran goaltender shaking rust off with a fan base that if he allows one goal, they're going to freak out, and you're already down 0-2 on the road. It really would almost have been the series is over, really, because it would have been a huge problem if that was the situation. Luckily, the Penguins salvaged this win. Matt Murray is still your goaltender, so you don't have to continue that debate, at least for another day. And then, more importantly, Sidney Crosby gets that game winner. Now, we talk so much on the post-game shows in round 1 and 2 against the Rangers and Capitals, that this Penguin team, unlike the last 5 years, is so deep now. They're cup champion level deep, and with Kessel now there and dominating, that they actually might not need Sidney Crosby and Malkin to be at their very best in order to win the Stanley Cup. That's how deep they are with the landscape of the league. But looking at that game, they almost lost it because Crosby and Malkin weren't at their best. Crosby emerged late, and they were able to win. But Crosby and Malkin haven't been at their best in this series so far, and they're in a 1-1 tie, having the road team split on their home ice. And that's without their best player in Stamkos not playing for Tampa. Does it now shift gears that even though they might have been able to beat the Rangers in Washington with Malkin and Crosby having a roller coaster ride, that, you know what, they have the depth, but they might actually need Crosby and Malkin to step up and step up more in order to win the Stanley Cup? You can't really do this without them. Is that now kind of our eyes being opened to that in this game?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you can't expect, as good as Phil Kessel has been in the playoffs and traditionally been in the playoffs, you can't expect that to continue forever. I think that's just not going to happen. And Nick Hagelin, as good as he is, there's a diminishing returns, and then, you know, at the end of the day, Nick Bonino is Nick Bonino. While having a fantastic first name, traditionally a third liner. You don't want to rely on them solely. You want to get your stars involved, and especially when they're getting paid as much as they are and as important as they are, you need Crosby and Malkin at some point to step up. And so it's nice to see Malkin come up there, and it's nice to see Sullivan. I think what he's doing is the right thing. He's inserting them together at certain times. We saw Crosby had a fantastic chance in the second, I believe, or second or third off of a Malkin feed. You know, you keep the depth by regularly throwing all three units out there, but when the time feels right, you go ahead and throw them together and piece them with, I don't know, Kunitz, as hard as that is now. And I've always been try to be the last person to really jump on a player, to really, like, get on their back and when everyone else is calling for their head. But, yeah, Chris Kunitz is really starting to show in this what's going on with him, how slow he's been and what a liability he is. But, you know, you pick and choose your time to absolutely throw those two together, Crosby and Malkin. And the rest of the time you keep the opposing defenses on their toes by rolling the three lines. But I think it's good that Sullivan's starting to finally cave a bit and giving them some time together.
Well, Sullivan is showing what you would want from a championship type coach, where he's not going to worry about who's friends with who and who's been playing for 30 years and who's buddies. He's going to do what's best for the team to win right now. He feels like Murray is the hot hand, so he's going with him over the incumbent veteran goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury still. He feels like Kunitz is lagging, so it's limiting his minutes. He feels like Olimata wasn't playing well. Whether he's healthy or not healthy, he feels like he wasn't playing well. So you see a decision made with Olimata. I mean, you got to be happy with Mike Sullivan. He's had some critics by starting Murray at the end of the season and getting him hurt, but we're looking at present day. What is today's day? This is May 16th. Present day, yes. May 16th, there's not much to really be upset on Mike Sullivan. He's doing his best here to coach the team to win now and worry about the future later.
Yeah, and I really think 95% of his moves have been just solid. He's had to have stretches here and there that every coach does, and, you know, people are not really raking over the coals about it, but they're, you know, you're starting to see at one point is Mike Sullivan not uncriticized or not uncriticizable? What point is it okay for you to criticize him? Well, sure, you can criticize him, but really, what is there to criticize? You know, maybe he plays someone like Kunitz on a line that he shouldn't, but if that's his biggest error and he's correcting that in game, then this is, like you said, this is what you want to see a championship coach do. He's making the right moves, and he's abandoning the status quo that had been here for far too long in terms of who plays where and whatnot, because in the past with Bielsma, with Johnston, Crosby still tattooed to Sid's side, and said instead he's getting spelled away. He's that overtime goal, we saw Brian Rust out there, and they play together, and they get along well, and they work well. But Rust was getting some time away from Crosby. He's trying to switch things up. He's trying to see what else works, and it's nice to see he's willing to do that and not just stick to his guns, as stubborn as Dan Bielsma was in his later years, doing the same thing, sticking to his guns.
Yeah, the only way Mike Sullivan would have been able to get heavily criticized and would have been on a hot seat, per se, is if Matt Murray never was healthy again and you had to go with Zakhoff up until now, and even if they're winning in spite of Zakhoff, then if you lose and don't win the cup, people would have said, well, of course you can't do with Zakhoff, although Fleury's healthy now, so you would have had to only get through two rounds. But it's unlikely you would beat Washington with Zakhoff, even if you could beat the Rangers. So if Matt Murray wasn't healthy and you got eliminated to the Capitals with Zakhoff, then you would have had people saying, well, you shouldn't have started Murray in the Flyers game, and then that would have been our whole offseason, and then that would have been the asinine drama we would have had. But luckily, Murray came back healthy. Murray has played well, exceeded expectations, and now Fleury's in there. Fleury's ready to go, but I'd imagine you're going to keep sticking with Murray as long as this team wins, no matter how the game goes. Do you even feel like that goal, that game winner by Sidney Crosby, gets his first goal in his last 8 playoff games, snaps his drought. Malkin has a drought of his own in his last 5, but he doesn't snap his. But if this Penguin team can get Crosby and Malkin going, because they're the two best players in the world, but they haven't been at their best yet in this series, if they can get those two going, in addition to what Phil Kessel's doing and how this team is flying and Matt Murray giving you enough in net and Fleury waiting in the wings, that if you get Crosby and Malkin going, Tampa is in a heap of trouble, and this actually could be a 5 or 6-game series, not even having to go the distance, because they're still undermanned without Stamkos, and this Penguin team has outplayed them through 2 games despite being 1-1 tied, but they've done it without Crosby and Malkin. If you get those two, there's a possibility Tampa Bay might not win again if Crosby and Malkin are playing the way they can at their high-powered level.
Well, like if you play the majority of the games, the rest of the series, like they did tonight, the series is over. I don't think it should have gone to overtime without that Murray goal, the goal Murray allowed late in the first, which was, I think, a genuine soft one going 5-hole on him. I think he should have had that. I don't think it should go to overtime. They outplayed Tampa for most of the time. They controlled the game most of the time. Even in the slower second period, as you said, they still were out-shooting the team. It was like 16-6 out-shooting Tampa in that second period. And I was listening to the radio call and listening to my buddy Brian Metzer, who we were both trying to get on here at some point, but you know him. He's big-timing both of us.
Well, he was on, I believe he was on, not this past season, maybe not even the year before, but I believe he was on either 2 seasons ago or 3 years ago. I don't know. At some point, I remember him being on.
Yeah, exactly. It's all blurred together at this point. But yeah. Him saying that the shot discrepancy was 16-6, but it really didn't feel like it. And yeah, that's true. The Penguins did get 16 shots to their six, but it was a slower period. It was a little less action. It was a little more evenly paced. And so it kind of deceptively felt a little more even than it was. But even then, they still had a 16-6 shot advantage in that period. And so in a slow period, you're still more than doubling the other team. If you keep playing like that in this series, yeah, it's done. Now, the question becomes, do they have that consistency in them? I think we've seen it, but can it play out?
Penguins have outplayed Tampa Bay through two games. They've won most of the stat categories. They've outplayed every team so far in these playoffs. It's just they haven't had their best yet from Crosby and Malkin, and they've been getting enough from every other piece of this team to able to advance and get this far, and they're just showing how incredibly deep they are. And it's just a kind of a bizarre feeling with this team the last few years, because they weren't able to get through playoff series because they weren't deep enough. They now finally are deep enough. This is what you wanted for the past 5 years.
Yeah, and it's to the point where I'd forgotten what playoff hockey felt like and how, you know, stressful it is, and how, because the Rangers series 3 seasons ago, once they came back 3-2, you just kind of saw the writing on the wall, another Bielsa collapse. Last year, we all agreed they're lucky to win one game with that beat-up roster against that Rangers team that had been to the finals the year before. So really, for basically 2 seasons, we've been coasting the easy life without the stress and worry, and we'd all just kind of resigned ourselves to, all right, this is just how it's going to be. And now it seems easy, but it's not, and I'm stressed because this is another overtime. They're finally winning them, but oh, my God. I don't want to say, it's hardly, spoiled is the wrong word to use, because you're never spoiled when your team's not in the playoffs. But we had the luxury of having a team that made it easy on you in the playoffs, where you knew the outcome ahead of time. Now I saw somebody tweet the other day, if the Pens are going to lose in the playoffs, lose now, because I can't handle losing in another round. And it's like, yeah, we're at that point. If you've come this far, either lose now or you better win it all. There's no other way about it.
Well, that's exactly what LeBron James said after losing the NBA Finals again last season, that he actually would rather not make the playoffs at all than continuously lose in the NBA Finals. And he might not have another once again, losing the NBA Finals the way things are going this year. So I wonder if he'll hold true to that. But there is something to be said there, and I don't know if he was serious or not. He later said he was joking, and people snickered. But you want to keep winning. You want to win as much as you can. But there is some sense of, this team is so deep. This team is so good. Everyone's not even at their best, and if they get at their best, this team is by far the best team remaining in the playoffs and should win the Cup and is the Cup favorite in the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it's almost a little bit annoying they have to win in these fashions of crawling through a game in overtime, of allowing the Capitals to come back in a game, in game 6 to tie it up and then win in overtime. Tampa Bay comes back in this, then they win in overtime. They're getting the wins. They're doing what they're supposed to do because they're the better team. But it's definitely not been easy, and it's almost a little disconcerting on how difficult it's been at times, but I guess it's rough to complain about winning. I mean, you're 1-1 in a Eastern Conference Finals series.
Yeah, but like you said, it's even that Capital series is deceiving, because yeah, they won it 6-2, but the Capitals could have easily won 3 of those games. You know, could have easily gone the other way. It could have been a Game 7 series. It could have gone the Capitals way the whole time. And mm-hmm. The Penguins got a lot of the breaks, a lot of the bounces, and so it seems easy. It feels like it's easy, but it's not easy. And you've got Crosby, you've got Malkin, you've got Kessel. And Kessel's been just out of his mind producing, which is fantastic to see. But like you said, no Crosby, no Malkin. It should be easier than this, and it should feel easier than it seems. And the numbers make it look easy, but the truth is it hasn't been. And you feel like, you know, you guys are still doing this to yourself. It's the old Penguins creeping into the new one. Thankful, you know. making things harder than they should, letting teams come back. Thankfully, they are the new Penguins, so even when the old Penguins creep in, they're able to shut the door and finish the deal. But why are you letting it get to that point? And, it, you know, you kind of think that. Like, tonight, you could have easily won. You know, Murray doesn't let in that goal. Chances are this is over. 2-1 regulation. Thankfully, Crosby ends it early because, as I said, going into these playoffs, based on my experience, you don't want overtimes. You don't want that because of how it wears how it wears down your team, how it wears down your players, and it affects them later on. So thankfully, it was only 45 seconds of overtime, but imagine if that had gone on two overtimes. You know, and it wears you out down the line in the finals. That's extra hits. That's extra minutes. That's extra miles on your legs. And it's the same thing that mindset of why is this so hard? This should be so much easier.
Yeah, this isn't baseball where there's only a few rounds. This isn't football where there's only one game every week, even when you're in the playoffs. This is the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is hockey. This is a gauntlet. This is four rounds of grueling seven-game series that last almost 3 months if you win a championship. And there's not more than 2 days within games. Really, there should only be 1 day within games if it wasn't for the NHL crazy scheduling. So there's really not much of a break, and you don't want to play more than you have to. You don't want to go to a seven-game series if you can beat somebody in 5 games, and you don't want to have to play all these overtime games if you can win in regulation. It just tires you out, and it will exhaust you for another round to go if you beat Tampa Bay, because you don't want to just win the Eastern Conference. You want to win the Stanley Cup when you're the Pittsburgh Penguins and you feel you're ready to go and you're this good. And it won't be easy against St. Louis or San Jose either, even though they're teams that haven't done it before and you have more experience. It's a whole other round, and you never know, and anyone can win. And in overtime, the Pens have been fortunate to win these overtime games in these playoffs, with the exception of the controversial goal to the Capitals in game one there by Oshie's goal and the review. But anyone can win overtime. Doesn't matter who's better, who's deeper, who has the stars, and who's going to the Hall of Fame. When you go at overtime, one bounce, one shot, one moment, anybody can win.
I mean, Penguins fans, we've seen Darius Kasparaitis beat Dominic Hasek to win an overtime game. That's exactly that sums up overtimes in the playoffs perfectly. Mario Lemieux never had an overtime playoff winner in his career.
Mm-hmm.
This was Sidney Crosby's first overtime winner.
Yeah,
you know it's not the Hall of Famers usually. It's not it's not somebody like Justin Williams usually. He's an exception to the rule. It's the little guys. It's the people you don't see coming, and It's what makes you clinch even tighter in overtime. It's Phil Kessel probably isn't going to win this. It's going to be somebody making a mistake and Matt Cullen or somebody like that winning it instead. And who's it going to be?
It's the Talbots. It's the Fedotenkos. It's the even with all those Hall of Famers on those Red Wing teams in the 90s and early 2000s, Darren McCarty getting you a game winner.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, you would throw darts to 10 Hall of Famers, and the other guy who is punching everybody in the face and gambling in Vegas is the one who scores the game winner. It's just ludicrous.
But Bob Orpik win a game in overtime 1 year.
Yeah. There you go. That's what it is. Although this one was a little bit different because you had the best player in the world jump-starting himself and getting the game winner, and it appeases the fan base because there was getting to be some criticism, and you got to feel like all the years, the general manager, the coach, even Malkin getting some blame and Fleury getting some blame, Crosby really hasn't got his share of it when maybe some should have been given to him. If the Penguins didn't win the Cup this year and he continued this decline and this lack of production, he would have definitely been deserving of some criticism and I think would have eventually got some finally. But he now gets the game winner and they tie up the series. Now, for the Tampa Bay side of things, the other drama they have kind of under the radar leading into these games, and always is the conversation of what I think, if he's going to play and what impact he could have when I hear the radio shows going into these games, previewing them. Do you think we're going to see Steven Stamkos at all? Do you think it's just posturing by the Lightning, which is what I think? Or do you think he's practicing and he's going to get in there, and if he gets in there, could make an impact? Will there be a Steven Stamkos sighting in the Eastern Conference Final? Because he is practicing, but
it's really the big question. And it's not just the big question in the series. It's the big question going into free agency because he is the big fish. And even if he gets in there for a few games and they're knocked out, it doesn't answer a lot of questions, because we look in our backyard at Pascal Dupuy. He tries to play again, and he has to retire because he just can't do it anymore without health risks. You look at the NBA, and you look at Chris Bosh, who had a blood clot and hasn't played since, and it was released today that the Heat really don't believe he's ever going to play again.
Right.
Can Stamkos play? Perhaps, yeah. But how effective will he be? Where will his mind be? Where will it lead? And going into free agency, what will he command as a result? Because I don't recall a lot of professional athletes having blood clots at this rate. And so far, all the ones I've seen, and that's Pascal Dupuy and Chris Bosh, have not been the same or haven't been able to keep playing and had to retire because of it. So even if he does play, which we've seen in Dupuy's case, he could be good for a short series. He could be good for the rest of a cup run. But what about for the rest of the career? You know, what's he? And I know I'm deviating from your question, but it's something that I've been thinking about for a while, because everybody assumed that Toronto was going to make a run at him because he's a hometown boy, and they wanted to play with Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
But if he can't play in the series, do we know if he's going to be able to play going forward? And how does it affect free agency? Because years and years and years, this is the Stamkos year. Suddenly, he may not be there. I'm leaning towards no. I know he switched his blood clot medication to play in the series, but I think right now it's just smoke and mirrors, and I don't think that we'll actually see him.
I think what Tampa Bay is doing is posturing. He's practicing. They're not letting you know up until an hour before the game. They're not being clear to the media. He's dropping these sound bites that I want to play and I feel ready to go. They want the Penguins to think that at any time they could drop Steven Stamkos, who is one of the best players in the world, is a scoring sensation, is one of the younger great players in this league, and is the guy that led them to the Stanley Cup final last year. So if you put Steven Stamkos 100% healthy in this series, this could be totally different. They are without their Sidney Crosby. He is not playing. I know Sidney Crosby has been struggling, but could you imagine if he's not on the ice at all? He still makes an impact for you when he's there, even if he's not scoring. Stamkos is not involved. It allows you to have an easier sigh of relief and a scheme easier against Tampa Bay. So they would love to have him if he's 100% healthy, and this might be a different series, and they might have the advantage in this. But I don't think he's going to play either. And I guess I'll ask you this now, Nick. You bring up Bosch, who, let's call a spade, his career might be over. You already have a situation where the NBA Players Association and the Miami Heat are in a conversation daily on whether or not they're even going to allow him to play. Chris Bosch wanted to sign a waiver to risk his own life to play, and the NBA Players Association didn't even support him doing that. And we all know about player associations in professional sports. They support you no matter what. The NFLPA is with Tom Brady. The Major League Baseball Player Association was with A-Rod. If your player association is with you no matter how guilty you look, how asinine you are, and what's going on. But they told Chris Bosh, we can't allow this. You might die on the court. We don't want to have that. So does the Chris Bosh situation and the fact that Steven Stamkos is a free agent but hasn't been able to play yet, and it looks like posturing now, do you believe that the summer of love, the LeBron of the NHL, where Steven Stamkos is going to be a free agent, you have Toronto freeing up money, and you have the gold medal coach going there from Detroit, and you're looking to rebuild, and he's Canadian, and all signs pointing to the Leafs, and then we have rumored the Detroit Red Wings. If Datsyuk retires, they would use that money for Stamkos. But do you think now, based on Stamkos still not playing and the Chris Bosh news and Pascal Dupuy, that it almost could ruin the offseason for Stamkos, and these teams could be shy of paying him the money, and that this almost could damper his career, as horrible as this sounds to say already?
It's to your last point, it's really hard to walk that line of sounding like you don't care when discussing something like this, when you do care, but there is a business side of it that you need to discuss, a practical side. You're not just disregarding somebody's health when you say something like this. It's like I saw a lot of on Twitter after Ben Bishop went down. This is good for us, but I feel horrible for him. It's that same thing of not wanting to sound callous, but you want the best for Steven Stamkos. But in the end, I think if he doesn't get in the series, yeah, this you might have one suitor, and it might be Tampa, and they might not Tampa. It might be Toronto, and they might be able to name their price, and it might be a steal of a deal for Toronto as a result, because if he's going to command what he could, the 10, 12 million that he possibly could, even 8 million if you want that, what assurances do you have that he'll not retire in a few games, or that he won't be able to, or that he'll actually be able to have a career afterwards?
Yeah.
You know,
it is
hurting his earning potential, which is unfortunate for him. It's going to help some team if they take a chance on him and he's fine, but based on precedent of a whole two people, but that's a recent two people, a current two people, one that actually plays the sport that he plays, it doesn't look good for him, quite frankly.
I think Chris Bosch's situation is almost even more of a barometer than Dupuis, even though Dupuis plays the same sport as Stamkos, because Chris Bosch just re-signed with the Heat a couple years ago to a big $100-plus million contract to be the new face of the franchise whenever Dwayne Wade retired because of his nagging injuries, and that seemingly is looking like a bad deal. I mean, if Bosch never plays again, they're wasting money. And even though he was an all-world player when he signed that deal and they were champions, the Lightning going back to the finals even without Stamkos, that's not going to give them any comfort for even them to re-sign him. Because it always was before that Stamkos was definitely going to leave no matter how good the team was. Now his only option might be re-signing with Tampa Bay for cheap just because they've been winning and they might have some allegiance to him. Or you might have some team overpaying for him and have the Chris Bosch scenario where the Leafs go ahead and pay him. They do what they normally were going to do. And then in a couple years, if not even that, he has to retire early or he keeps missing games and it's up and down and you just don't know. And he's a game changer when he's in there and playing. But when he's not playing, you don't have him, so you're wasting the money. It would really be a Toronto Maple Leaf thing to do, though, to have their entire half decade be for this offseason, really. They get Babcock finally. They're rebuilding. They freed all this money. They have the money for Stamkos. He wants to go there. Him and Babcock are already apparently talking. It's all signs pointing to him going to Toronto, even if they go back to the Cup Final in Tampa Bay. And yet, they could get Stamkos with blood clot issues and have his career be shortened. And that just would be further the hilarity that is the Toronto Maple Leafs franchise since 1967. I mean, that would be a Maple Leaf thing to do. This would happen to them.
Yeah, and even
not to
Austin
make this
Matthews.
Funny, but this really would be
no. it that's so Maple Leafs. Yeah, no, even Austin Matthews isn't enough of a consolation prize there. The winning the lottery is great, but when you think you're going to win the lottery and have Stamkos, and suddenly you've only won the lottery, you know, it's not quite the same.
It's like when you
thought you were going to save the day and get the girl. Well, you saved the day, but you didn't get the girl. It's all a little hollow after that.
Yeah. It's almost like the girl flirted with you, and you might have won a date or two, but the relationship didn't become long-term when you've been in love with her your whole life. It's the Ross and Rachel. Like, if Ross would have never got back with Rachel, they dated, he went on a break, he cheated on her, and then they never got back together. That would have been, this is a little bit sour taste. You're in love with her your whole life, you get her, then you go on a break, you cheat on her, and you ruin things, and you never get back with her? That would have...
She goes to Paris instead of coming back for you? I mean, come on.
I know. Exactly.
Could
you imagine the Friends series ending without Ross and Rachel back together? And I have that on the mind because the girlfriend and I are Netflix been watching Friends.
So we fall asleep to every night, so yeah.
Okay,
I think that's just the thing that happens when you get in a relationship. You just start watching Friends. I think that's just the case.
Well, it's like it's the go-to series. We did Making a Murder. We've done Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. We've done different series, but after you finish a series, and then you're waiting to go to another one, or you're not sure what series to start, or maybe you don't have the time to commit to really binge watching a long series that's going to make you think more. When in doubt, go to Friends. If you don't know, turn on Friends. There's nothing to think about there. There's nothing to stress about there. You can miss an episode, go back there 3 weeks later, no problem. Friends is really the go-to. And if you get Seinfeld on Netflix, that'll be money as well. But, yeah,
I have Hulu, so I've got Seinfeld. Speaking of which, and it's Penguins Lightning related, I dropped a Seinfeld reference today related to this that I'm disappointed you didn't get. Related
I don't think
to this series.
I mean, I follow you on Twitter. I don't know if I caught that one. I saw some Seinfeld references about, if you didn't know, today is the 20th anniversary of Susan Ross's death. I just saw that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
George's wife had died licking the envelope. So she passed away on the series on May 16, 1996. So 2016 makes it 20 years later. But I didn't get – where was your Seinfeld reference? What did you say?
It was when the news about the jersey ban, the partial jersey ban came out.
Uh-huh.
And I said that this kind of thing is not new by any means.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I went
yeah.
ahead – and went ahead and dropped a lane, not removing the Orioles cap from behind the behind home plate.
Well, that's solid. I saw that type of tweet from others, so I didn't catch it from you. I would have gave you a favor if I saw it. But that was a popular
right.
tweet today, and that definitely worked there. I guess, we talked a lot about the game. It's a 1-1 series, back and forth. I don't think Stamkos is going to play either. We don't know what that's going to lead for the offseason. If Crosby and Malkin get going, this could wrap up early. You're going to stick with Murray now that you won the game. So – before we close this, I guess we can get your take and segue onto that. Do you have the anger and the animosity, and are you freaking out like Penguin fans were all through today about the release of Tampa Bay restricting seating and not allowing Penguin jerseys in certain seating and trying to get more of their home fans on TV and that marketing strategy that they're employing? They've been doing it for a couple of years now. It does kind of suck to road fans, but it's not new to them. What are your feelings on Tampa Bay and their marketing strategy with merchandise from the opposing team's fans at the games in Tampa Bay? As we
I'm
go
not
to
mad.
Tampa.
Yeah, I'm not mad. I'm not flipping out about it. I mean, they're free to do whatever. You remember back in 2008 or the 2009 playoff, Ted Leonsis didn't allow anybody from a 412 or area code to buy tickets to Penguins games. Same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's dumb on their part. I think it looks really petty and stupid on their part. I get it, but I also think it's not a good look. You know, I think it makes them feel like they can't fill their arena up with enough of their fans. They're worried about making it look like there are too many of their fans. I think it, and you know, in that case, I think it just makes them look like they worry they don't have enough fans. So they're free to do it. It's their call. They can do what they want. I just think it makes them look like they're covering up a problem before there ever even is one. I think it's just silly on their part.
I mean, here's the deal with this. It affects so few and most likely no one who is complaining and is so upset and is going nuts on social media is going to be affected because they can't afford the seats. These seats are the $1,000 price ticket seats, and you're gonna be on the glass. And quite frankly, I know they want their home fans to be the ones that are on TV on the glass, and that does look a little bit petty. But you're not. No one complaining that I'm following, that I'm seeing on social media, is going to be sitting there and dropping a G to go to a game in Florida as a Penguin fan, whether you live there or not, and you're just not dropping that money to go to those games. It's not going to affect you. So if it doesn't affect you in general in life, if it doesn't affect you, why are you going to freak out? Why are you going to stress about it? And why are you going to lose sleep about it? They are free to do whatever they want. And this does speak to a little bit of the Pittsburgh fan base. So in tap with Pittsburgh sports, they don't spread it out, because the Lightning have done this for 2 years now, if not 3 years. And that would bring to 7 postseason series now, since they won the East and went to the Cup final last year, 4 series. This now would be the 3rd of this playoffs. That 7 series they're doing this. It's not new. It's what they've been doing now for a couple years, if not longer. It sucks, I guess, for the – if you're a visiting fan, you're a Penguin fan that lives in Florida, or you're going to travel to Florida, and you have $1,000 to drop and go to these games, and you were going to spend $1,000 and you make that kind of cash, then I feel sorry for you. Okay, that sucks. Go ahead and try to finagle some other way, wear a Tampa Bay jersey with some expression and swear on the shirt if you really want to make a statement. But there's nobody following either one of us. There's nobody reading PensInitiative.com. There's nobody on Twitter. And there's nobody that is listening to this podcast that is dropping $1,000 to go sit in those seats and go to that game. It just not happening. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know one person in my life that has those means, has that ability, and is a Penguins fan, but he's not going to do it.
That's he's not going to. Not going still.
No,
so.
No, yeah. So it's just, and you know, at first I read it, I saw the headline, and almost fell for the headline outrage. And then
yeah.
I read
Space.
And actually saw the kind of people that it affects. And it's just like, so what? You know, and as I said, I get it. That's their deal. That's fine. I think it makes them look worse because they don't think they can fill enough of their arena with their fans that they need to put those restrictions in. And that's cool. If that's the way they feel, it's unfortunate, but hey, go for it.
But maybe does that speak to the fact that even though they're on the verge of back-to-back cup finals, even though they won a Stanley Cup in 2004 and they've been to another one and they've had Hall of Fame players in Martin St. Louis, they have a sensational young player in Steven Stamkos when he's healthy. They have Ben Bishop, one of the better goaltenders in the league. They have Victor Hedman. They have Stallman. They have young players. They're a good team, and they've been a consistent contender now for several years in a row, and they can't get more of a fan base. Does that speak to them as an organization, or does that speak to the hockey market in Florida and the non-traditional hockey market they're in despite winning? They can't get more fans, and they have to resort to these tactics.
And that's always the big question. And I'm always first to defend, like, the non-traditional markets because you see them in Nashville taking off.
Mm-hmm.
You see them in Dallas. It's actually a big deal. You see them in not Phoenix, that's for sure.
No.
You see it in Raleigh, and sure, I put that with a caveat because, yeah, the game I went to this year, we spent, I think, between my girlfriend and I's tickets, there was maybe $20, and that was in the nosebleeds. Total, $20. Yeah. So, yeah, the crowds weren't great, but they have an 88% renewal rate for season tickets, and that's the highest they've ever had. When they actually have a good team there, people actually come visit. Because look what they have to compete with. Duke, UNC, NC State. There's a lot to compete with out there. But when they have good teams, they draw. So it's tough to say with Tampa because I have not followed that market closely enough to know. I know Miami just doesn't work. I know that. I know Phoenix just doesn't work. But I feel like Tampa has the ability to work, just for whatever reason. In this instance, they feel they want to make sure that they have enough fans and that they're well represented. It's been in place well before Pittsburgh was even on their radar. But you know how Pittsburgh people are. We quote unquote travel well just because their family has moved out of the area and so now they're living elsewhere and they've collapsed. You know, they've clamped on. It's That mythos of the Pittsburgh fan travels so well has always kind of bothered me because it's not necessarily that it's traveled well. It's that the bad times in the 70s and 80s had the parents move out and now they live elsewhere, but they like the teams their parents did. All right. But anyway, that's another rant for another time. But I haven't had the impression that Tampa is a market like Miami that's just not working or like Arizona that's just not working. But I think that they're also still – aware of who they are, of where they are, and they're protective of that and want to make sure that they look good as a result because they do their best.
Well, honestly, Nick, even if it is because they don't feel they have enough of a fan base despite some recent winning, and even if it is a manipulative strategy and they don't care if they look bad because they want to get their fans there and they want to get on TV, more of their fans there, so they're willing to resort to whatever tactics they have to do, then you can argue and say, okay, it's a good strategy. If you don't feel like you're in a traditional market, you don't feel like your market has the fans, but you're winning and you're flourishing there financially, then do whatever you have to do. Then it could be a good strategy for you. Now, hockey's always going to want to be in Florida in some capacity, so even if the Panthers leave, then you're going to stick with Tampa Bay. And I just would guess that Tampa Bay is flourishing more than the Panther market because that's Miami. It's more exotic. They haven't been winning as much. You have a Stanley Cup. You have less exotic and travel destination of Tampa Bay. I don't know. Florida brings a little bit more, I guess. But if you don't have the fans and you're not in a market that's winning and you're in the playoffs and you're not having the luck of Nashville and their rabid fan base or San Jose in non-traditional markets, then maybe you have to resort to these tactics and I guess more power to you. Because if I'm on the marketing team, if our jobs and we're on the marketing team of the Tampa Bay Lightning and they're saying to you, your job is to get Tampa Bay Lightning fans in this building and get them on TV, and we don't believe there really are enough in that area in comparison to the Pittsburgh fans that are going to travel well or may live in Florida who migrate, then we might have to come up with a strategy too. Because maybe that was the initiative. Maybe they said, hey, marketing team, you got to get more Lightning fans on that glass, and you got to get them down here. They didn't have any other option because they didn't have enough confidence in the fan base. Maybe they're indirectly insulting their own fan base, but having to do what they have to do to make it look good for them and to get fans there, whether they're actually there or not. But they need to do something. So maybe more power to them on that. I do see we have somebody here waiting on the line. I don't have any idea whose number this is. You know who the 347 area code could be?
I have no clue.
347 area code. I don't know anybody in my life with 347 area code. I'm not going to try to do the math and add and subtract and multiply and divide to figure out what part of the country that could be in. So what we're going to do here, we are going to throw the dice. And, well, it doesn't matter because internet radio is a podcast, so this person swears, it really doesn't matter. Wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah.
And I would also wouldn't be the first time that I had somebody call on a radio show I was hosting, even on commercial radio, where I've been insulted. So if that happens, that also wouldn't be first. So we really can't have any firsts here, Nick. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring this person with 347 area code on the Game 2 post-game show, Radio PI hotline here on the Pens and Nick Fairwaves. 347 area code, who are you?
Hey, guys, what's going on? This is Bryce calling from Brooklyn.
Okay.
What up, Bryce?
What's going on, Bryce? How's your night?
Hey, night's been good, man. Night's been good. Pens win, so that's good. Yeah,
okay.
I heard the show, thought I'd call in. Nothing nefarious going on, man. Just call with a couple comments, and then I'll be out.
No problem.
But
just
2 points. One, you're absolutely right about the Pittsburgh and the traveling thing. I mean, you know, people like to say it. It's a good soundbite. But the bottom line is people have migrated out the city, and they have an affinity for the Pittsburgh team, so it never leaves. And there's a lot of those people. And plus with the winning, whether it be the Steelers, whether it be the Pens in the early 90s with Lemieux, you know, there's legacy, there's tradition. So these fans are going to stay with their team. And you know, you just continue that with great players like Crosby. People are going to – even if you're not a huge hockey fan – you know, you're gonna root for the hometown team, so that just makes sense. My second point is, you know, Tampa Bay's really good hockey team. They're really good. They're fast. They swarm you. But I think when it comes down to it, Crosby and Malcolm, I mean, Crosby makes the play in overtime. We just need more of that because if we get those type of plays from those two guys, I think those two guys are still the best players on the ice, and we can win the series and get to the cup. So those are my thoughts.
Do you think, Bryce, that if Crosby and Malkin get going and we see the game winner from Crosby there to capture game two, that they could wrap this up quickly against Tampa Bay, that they've been the better team and they're just kind of waiting for those two stars to emerge and that would be it if they do?
Oh, you know, Tampa Bay's a good team. I'm not going to use the word quick. I'm not going to use the word quick. Put it like this. If this ignites Crosby and Malkin – And they get going, it can be, I would say, Pittsburgh in six.
Okay.
But I'm not going to go five or anything like that. Tampa Bay is a really good hockey team. They're fast. They really get after you. They swarm you. But, you know, playing that style, it seems that fits Crosby and Malkin. If they can get going, then I think Pittsburgh in six.
You're at the stage of the playoffs where teams don't get here by accident. You don't have a Carolina Hurricanes very often, like in 2009, where you just roll through without any regard.
Right.
They're going to put up fights. You're not going to see a sweep. You're not going to see a five-game series. As better as the Penguins played today, Tampa's going to be fired up on their home ice. They're going to have last change, which is going to be important because they can get Stallman, and they can get Hedman out there against Crosby and Malkin, and that's going to be huge. They're going to win at least one game at home. It's going to go at least six. I just don't see any way, as Bryce said, it's going to five. It's a little arrogance, I think, to say that they can win the next four, three in a row.
Well, I'm an arrogant guy, so, I mean, it wouldn't be anything new with me. But I guess, too, if you want to flip this and give the glass half full for the Tampa Bay Lightning perspective, even though the Penguins got all the momentum and Crosby scores the game winner and they get over the hurdle of whether you're going to pull Murray and he stays in there and they get the win, and everyone in Pittsburgh Penguin Nation is all excited and happy and they feel like they're going to take this series if Crosby and Malkin get going, but the Lightning fans could just say to you, we split on the road, we're going home, you're supposed to win one game on the road, and then you're happy. You're not going to expect to win both of them in Pittsburgh, and the Lightning probably are going to say to themselves in the locker room after losing that game in overtime, I'm sure the coach told those guys, hey, We did what we had to do. We split in Pittsburgh. We're going home. It doesn't matter how we did it. It's 1-1, and every team's win counts the same. Forget it. We're going home to game three. We have momentum in our – we feel like we have momentum because it's 1-1, and we're going home.
You know, I would absolutely have to agree with that. And, you know, I think this game three is going to be really, really crucial, particularly, look, if Crosby and Malkin get going in terms of not even goal scoring, but assists, getting a lot of shots, you know, Pittsburgh needs to maybe, even for the strength of their defense and their goalie, if they can get a game three where they get one of these grinded out 1-0 wins where Malkin gets a goal or Crosby gets another one, I think that goes a long way in the psyche of the team that, hey, we can go to Tampa Bay, we can grind it out, they're a fast-moving team. Maybe we can, if we can get a shutout and keep them from scoring when they've gotten three goals in both of these games, I'll take a win like that because I think mentally it sets them up for a good game four. What do you guys think?
Nick?
No, I think that's a really good point. It's what have they done for a lot of these playoffs? It's not just shut the other team down, it's outscore them. For them to go ahead and play a game to where they realize we can, if we need to, we can not so much sit back, but we can defend and we can attack, but also, you know, we can hold them back. We don't have to outscore them. We can just play better defense and play better than them. I think that'd be good for them, not just, you know, for in this series, but realizing that against San Jose or St. Louis, too, to have that idea in their head of, we don't just have to outscore them. We can play more than one kind of game.
Bryce, I want to get you out of here with this. I appreciate the call. I know there was nothing nefarious, but I kind of would have been that kind of would have been entertaining for me, even if there was. But I appreciate the call and appreciate the hockey talk. I just got to ask you. You said you're a Penguin fan from Brooklyn. So are you from Pittsburgh? And how is that? Are there many other Penguin fans in Brooklyn? The Islanders just go to Brooklyn, and I'm kind of curious what the fan base is for them out there. But how is it being a Penguin fan in Brooklyn?
Oh, man, come on. Nothing that exotic, my man. I was born and raised in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I'm one of those transplants that's up here living in Brooklyn. But, you know, when I do watch hockey, and especially playoff hockey, you know I'm rooting for the Pens. I am what I described earlier on in the call.
That sounds good, man.
All right, well, thanks for calling in, Bryce from Brooklyn.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. You too.
That was interesting. I was almost expecting. I was kind of a little hesitant there, Nick. I saw the 347 area code. I'm thinking there's nobody on Penn's initiative. I got almost everybody's numbers. I'm not aware of anyone with a 347. I'm kind of a heel on Twitter. I'm feeling like if it was a random person on Twitter, they're probably going to call and be unpleased with something I said here. And that would have been fine. I could have went back and forth. But instead, we got Bryce from Brooklyn. He was a kind fella, and we talked some hockey. How about that?
That was a really solid call. I was having flashbacks to one of the first shows Paul and I did together when some random number popped up, and we took the call, and we had F-bombs dropped, and the N-word dropped, and we're just like, oh, well, this is live. Yeah, it got real. And we're like, well, all right, this is a thing now. But no, and Bryce brought the heat, the knowledgeable heat. Bryce, you can call anytime, my man, and you will always get on, no matter what. That was a really good call. He brought some really solid insight, and it was very welcomed. It was nice to have.
Definitely. We haven't really been taking calls from the postgame show, but the show's out there. I didn't even tweet the number or say the number on air. So this is Bryce. Maybe he's in the closet as a dedicated listener to Radio PI and Mike Osby. And he finally got the nerve to get on the show. But I'm not aware of any person who has ever tweeted with me or any exchange on social media with anybody really named Bryce at all, aside from me making jokes about Bryce Harper. So, Bryce, if you're out there, you just called in to the postgame show here in Game 2, follow at Nick422 and at MikeOsby11, because we'd love to see you more on the Twitterverse. I'm not sure. Maybe you already are following us, but we can get more from Bryce.
You got to love the first time, long time, too. Those are the good ones. You know, they usually bring the good calls.
Yeah, first time, long time. First time caller, long time listener. Thank you, Bryce from Brooklyn. Nick, we're going to wrap this up now. Jeff from Manchin, who's been on the last few postgame shows with me, not able to find, I think he lost his cell phone or something, so he can't give us the Wilkes-Barre Scranton update for the series with Hershey and what they're doing in the playoffs.
He's still riding around Chocolate World. That's what's truly going on. He's stuck in the loop with the animatronics.
But his literal excuse is that he cannot find his cell phone. So I'm hoping he does find that cell phone, because, you know, in 2016, you really can't go a day without a cell phone. I know I would freak out. Any final words, any keys to the rest of this series? Going to Game 3, the Penguins get the game winner in Game 2. Crosby gets the game winner. Murray stays in there and gets another win. The Penguins now have a 1-1 tie, but the series shifts and goes on the road to Tampa Bay. So the Lightning are also going to feel like they have momentum.
These are two evenly matched teams. I think it was in the series preview or the spreadsheet thing that we did, that Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh have very similar. It's all blurred together. I told you how much I've been traveling. My life is a blur. I don't know where I am.
Spreadsheet thing's accurate. Something on there, yeah.
But they have similar depth, and like Tampa's depth is B+, and the Penguins is A-. There's just a small difference to where I give the Penguins the edge. But I think the next two games, that final change is going to be a big factor, because now Cooper has the chance to put his two big boys out against anyone. You Strawman out there, Hedman out there on different pairings. And if he sees Sullivan pairing Malkin and Crosby together, send one of them out, because, you know, the next line out there is going to be the HBK line. And then you send the other one out, and suddenly both those lines have a lot of trouble scoring or getting opportunity, because you have two very good, very big defensemen out there. And I think that's going to be a huge factor. It's going to be reliant on Murray even more, and we might need one of those 1-0 grinded out wins that Bryce mentioned. I think the next two games, that's going to be big.
I think we're going to need to get Shawn Michaels to go to one of these games, too, with the HBK line clicking, and maybe get some of his theme music here on the soundboard. I saw him tweeting, Shawn Michaels from his official account was tweeting, that now he's watching the game. So the Penguins this season, they already got one championship down. They have accumulated the coolest hockey fans new to the team this season, Andrew W.K. and Shawn Michaels. And I know the St. Louis Blues got a new hockey fan, but I don't think a Good Morning America appearance can warrant the equivalent to WrestleMania. Pens are happy to have Shawn Michaels aboard the train, as well as Andrew W.K. I will say, for my last words here, I do think the winner of Game 3 takes this series. It's going to Tampa. It's on the road for the Penguins. They feel like they have momentum because the way they won Game 2 with the overtime winner by Crosby, but the Lightning feel they have momentum because they split on the road, and now they're going home, and they're the defending conference champion. So the winner of this Game 3 is really going to have kind of momentum. It's going to be a very important game for the series. The Penguins win that game, they are already playing with house money and have already split on the road as well. Whereas Tampa wins that game, they can really start bearing the Penguins if they win Game 4 and take a commanding lead. And then you might even hear more Stamkos conversations, either more posturing or maybe he'll get healthier. We just don't know. Ben Bishop also could return. And it could bring more Fleury and Murray debates. And then the drama would really go back towards the Penguins. And that Game 3 also could tell you on whether the Crosby game winner in Game 2 was just a tease, or Crosby and Malkin both will get going and be the two best players in the world. And in addition, with Phil Kessel, we'll have a big three and lead this team to a Stanley Cup final appearance, if not then a Stanley Cup championship. So they need those guys, and Game 3 could kind of tell you what the rest of the series is going to be like. And I do feel, I know I've been saying it, and you and Bryce said it was arrogant, and I always like to be realistic, and usually I'm the negative one when it comes to being realistic on the Pens here and Pittsburgh teams, but I do feel like that if Crosby Malkin get going and the Penguins win Game 3 handily, they could wrap this up in 5, and you might not see any more wins from the Tampa Bay Lightning, because that's the one thing this team is missing. Crosby and Malkin and their best players playing their best, with the exception of Kessel. They've had the depth they haven't had in recent years. They have Murray playing decent enough. But they get Crosby and Malkin, they should be smooth sailing. And Nick, the last thing I'll ask you here as we finish the show, the way you were talking, it kind of led me to believe this, but I'll ask you bluntly and put you on the spot. You said the Penguins have the depth edge, so it's two good teams in a close series. You're still going to go Pittsburgh. If Steven Stamkos, we talked about him earlier, and the question mark for the offseason with his health. If Steven Stamkos was 100% and you had Steven Stamkos in this series the entirety at 100%, would you then pick and give the advantage to Tampa Bay?
I think so. They just got the depth. They've got a similar depth to Crosby and Malkin with Drouin and Stamkos in that sense, because Drouin's just been lighting the world on fire these past two games. And even
Tyler Johnson.
In the previous series. Yeah, Tyler Johnson's there too. I think they've got the better depth, but you don't have Stamkos. And even if he were to come back, he's been months removed from playing. He is maybe in the back of his mind unsure of what kind of hit he can take. You wouldn't see the full Stamkos experience. Even if he comes back, I still take Penguins, which I think that the full Stamkos experience is a great band name, by the way.
it is, really, yes. The full Stamkos experience, yes.
Even if he does come back, I still get the Penguins, just because you're not getting a 100% Steven Stamkos. You're not getting the one that you would have had mid-stride, mid-season. You're going to have a guy that's rusty, that's shaky, and has health concerns still.
And honestly, and I don't want to put this on him, because Steven Stamkos is a great young player, a leader for that team, took over after Marc-Antoine St. Louis kind of led them to some drama and screwed them over, per se. It was a hard spot to be put in, and I don't know him personally, so I can't claim this. But with his offseason coming and the free agency season he's supposed to be having, and all these teams vying for Steven Stamkos' services, and the money he's looking to hopefully get, with the blood clot issues, if he does come back, will he play as hard as he would have prior to the clot, knowing in the back of his mind his wallet is on the line here? Because if he gets hurt again or gets hit in the wrong spot or doesn't play well, he's going to lose money. The Toronto Maple Leafs, the Red Wings, those teams may not want to pay him as much, or they might not want him anymore. Or, Nick, does he even make the decision in the back of his mind, I don't want to play at all in these playoffs because I selfishly care more about my offseason than this team winning right now. I don't want to put that on him, but these are questions that he's going to be asking himself personally with his family and his girlfriend or wife or whatever he has, that, hey, I got my offseason to come as a free agent. I'm a young player. I got to get this money. I can't live off everything else yet. This is my big cash out type offseason. And he could risk it all by playing, and maybe he'd rather not play to preserve himself for that offseason. And maybe the Lightning are even thinking of that, too. They want to try to re-sign him, and they want to preserve him, and they feel like they're good enough to move without him. So a lot of questions he's going to have to ask himself within. And I just don't think we're going to see him. And I think that his agent would rather – it's like you had with Strasburg years ago at the Nationals. Maybe they want to preserve the guy. Well, I don't know. I mean, we've seen the agents kind of get involved here. I don't know how much involved his agent is, but if Steven Stamkos playing is risking himself for the future of him individually, and I hope that if Steven Stamkos does come back and play in this series, Lightning fans appreciate what he's doing, because he's literally risking his own life to try to win a damn hockey game for you. But it'll be something to keep an eye on, what Steven Stamkos does. And the more this series goes, the distance, the more those question marks will keep on raging on. But it's 1-1. We're going to game 3. So far, no Stamkos. Crosby finally gets the game winner, and Murray is still the Penguins' goaltender. So all those dramas right now are kind of still capped with a lid on them. But, Nick, glad to be back with you here, despite your travels, and give my best and my prayers are with you and yours, from what you told me privately.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you. And it's nice to be back on and be settled in a city for once. I got two more days of travel, and then I can actually just stay in one place for about a month and a half. And at the end of that, there might be a surprise visit to Pittsburgh. I'm still not sure. There might be. There might be.
Does it hinge on what the Penguins do?
It does not. It does not. July 4th area, I'll be in Huntington, West Virginia for a soccer tournament. And Pittsburgh's 4.5 hours away. If I've got a car to myself, I don't have to work for a week, I'm coming up. But hey, you know, we'll see.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, if you do come up, you have a couch, or even we have a spare therapeutic mattress. Maybe you put your name on it that you can stay at my place. So if that happens,
that's fancy.
Maybe I'll even meet you halfway, and we'll give you the West Virginia University party in Morgantown. I got some friends where we can stay over there too. So that's about
grab some couches and
we can
take your time.
Cheers, beers, and Mountaineers. Maybe Scott Van Pelt will join us. Butcher Gross was at the game for the Penguins tonight at Conflict Energy Center. So you never know. All right. Yep. Another one of these, Nick. Thanks. I'll talk to you later, man.
Always a pleasure, Mike.
All right. That was more Radio Gold here, more post-game Radio Gold. This was Game 2's edition here of the Radio PI post-game show in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Penguins win. They win Game 2, 3-2. They do it in overtime. Sidney Crosby finally breaks out of his scoring snide and is no longer drowning in the scoring sheet and gets the game winner, as Sidney Crosby gets the game winner in overtime and the Penguins win, tying up the series 1-1. Momentum maybe on Pittsburgh because Crosby gets the game winner and Murray stays in net. Maybe on Tampa because they split in Pittsburgh and are now going home, despite still not having Steven Stamkos. Questions will rage on. Do we get Steven Stamkos later in the series? Does he come back? Does he risk his offseason and his personal health with his blood clot ailment to play in the Eastern Conference Final? He's practicing. That's all we got. Is it posturing or are we going to see him? Chris Bosch, Pascal Dupuis, they basically can't give you the same production. Chris Bosch, career might be over, might be a contract wasted. What will the offseason be for Stamkos? A lot to keep an eye on with Steven Stamkos, and it'll continue to in just this series by itself. Do we get him in this series? Does he worry about his own self, or does him even playing as part of his offseason because he wants to rush back to perform? Does the Lightning not want to play him? Do they want to try to re-sign him, or they have given up on re-signing him, so they're going to try to burn him out or maybe preserve him? I mean, we don't know. A lot of questions about Steven Stamkos. I'm interested in those. Will Matt Murray stay in the Penguins' net, or will a loss kick him out of the net? What is the leash now for him? He got a win but didn't really play his best. Almost got pulled mid-game. We saw Mike Sullivan whisper in Marc-Andre Fleury's ears, "Are you ready? Get ready." Fleury said he was ready. He's healthy now. He's been your goaltender for 10 years and got 300-plus wins. Borderline Hall of Famer. Nothing's guaranteed with him, though. Hasn't played in 2 months and would be shaking rust off should the Penguins already have went with him going into this series. But that debate kind of is dead now, but it's 1-1. Probably be 1-1 with either guy. Crosby and Malkin. Will they get going? Do they need to get going for this team to win despite its depth? Continue to be thrilled by Phil the Thrill Kessel. And will we get some controversy and some suspensions in this series that we had in the last one? We haven't had that yet. Maybe some Penguin fans would have wanted that from Callahan and some others, but we didn't get it yet. Although, will Callahan come back and play in this series as he mysteriously did not contribute in Game 2, and what will be the status of Ben Bishop, the Tampa Bay Lightning, as his backup played very, very well at the end of Game 1 in their win, and then in Game 2 despite the loss, but he didn't win, and Ben Bishop is your all-world goaltender that led you to a cup final just a season ago. We got to assume they go back to him if he is healthy. They say his day-to-day seemed to be a lot more serious with his exit on a stretcher in Game 1. Also, thanks to Bryce for the call, the random call from Bryce from Brooklyn. Thought he was going to be nefarious, thought he was going to call and attack the host here as I kind of go at others on the social media. That's where we're going to get our calls from. So we got a nice friendly call with some knowledge from Bryce, former Pittsburgher transplant now in Brooklyn, a non-traditional hockey market. They got a hockey team now as the New York Islanders go to Brooklyn. But he's staying true to the Pittsburgh Penguins and watching those games and listen to Radio PI. So how about that? Maybe we'll get Bryce to call back for another post-game show too. I mean, be a long-time caller. He'll become, as we're going to kind of figure that he's been a long-time listener and first-time caller. Keep going to PensInitiative.com and PittsburghSportsInitiative.com, our brother, sister, cousin site. We don't know what to call it still. Give you some more coverage on the Pittsburgh Penguins, the analysis, the entertainment, the asinine fun, and the memes. We drop the knowledge as well there on PensInitiative.com and PittsburghSportsInitiative.com. PittsburghSportsInitiative.com at @PGH_initiative on Twitter. They need some more followers. Go follow them. They give you polls daily. They give you more covers than just the Penguins. They go to the Steelers and Pirates as well. I throw the podcasts on there and even give you some other podcasts by Bucko's Talk and some others. Penn's Anarchy is involved with Pittsburgh Sports Initiative. So go there. And PensInitiative.com, of course, the parent of this enterprise, where we give you recaps, previews, analysis, articles, controversy, clickbait. We might throw a controversial tagline up there and give you nothing on the page. We've done it before. Sorry, not sorry. And it's all under this umbrella. And all of it also gives you Radio PI, which is the podcast network, the Radio PI podcast network, bringing you post-game shows throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. We've been doing that for several years, as well as podcasts with credentialed media members throughout the season. maybe even in the off season. Dr. Sheeler from Sheeler Chiropractics has made that all possible, as well as DKPittsburghSports.com. So for my co-host for this broadcast, Nick Case, and even the caller Bryce from Brooklyn, for the PensInitiative.com family, as well as PittsburghSportsInitiative.com, this was another Radio Gold edition of the Stanley Cup Playoff post-game show, powered by Dr. Sheeler of Sheeler Chiropractics and DKPittsburghSports.com. On the Radio PI Podcast Network and the Pens Initiative Airwaves.
Come on. Hot, quicker than your average. Pop a twist, cabbage on instinct. Niggas don't think shit, stink pink gators. My Detroit players, Tim's for my hooligans in Brooklyn. Dead right, it's the head right. Biggie there, air night. Papa been fool since days of under rules. Never lose, never choose to. Bruce, who's who? Do something to us.
Come on.
Talk, go through us. Girls want to us, wanna do us. Screw us, who us? Yeah, Papa and Pump. Close like Starsky and Hutch, stick to clutch. Yeah, I squeeze three at your cherry M3. Bang every MC
take that.
Easily.
Take that.
Recently, niggas frontin' ain't saying nothing, so I just keep my peace.
Come
keep
on,
my
on.
Peace. Cubans with the Jesus peace.
Thank
with
you,
my peace. Packing, asking who want it. You got it, nigga, flaunt it. That Brooklyn bullshit, we on it. To DKNY, Miami, D.C., prefer Versace. All Philly hoes know it's Moschino. Every cutie with the booty for the feature. Now who's the real dude? Meaning who's really the shit? The niggas ride dick. Frank White push the stick called the Lex. LX, 4.5. Bulletproof glass tips if I want some ass. Gon' blast, we first. Ask questions last. That's how most of these so-called gangsters pass.
Bye
at
bye.
Last, a nigga rapping about blunts and bras, tits and bras, menage a trois, sex and expensive cars, and still leave you on the pavement. Condo paid for, no car payment, at my arraignment, no for the plaintiff. Your daughter's tied up in the Brooklyn basement, face it, not guilty, that's how I stay true. Richer than rich, so you niggas come and get me.
Come on.
Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me, and I just love your flashy ways. Guess it's why they're broken, you're so bad. Baby, baby, can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me, and I just love your flashy ways. Guess it's why they're broken, you're so bad.
I can feel you.